You are listening to The Vitals, a monthly podcast for all things oncology nursing. For even more content, check out oncologynursingnews.com or find Oncology Nursing News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Hi, everyone. This is Lindsay Fisher, Associate Editor at Oncology Nursing News. For this episode, we spoke with public health expert and certified health education specialist Chastity Washington about how COVID has exacerbated pre-existing disparities in cancer care. Chastity spoke to our team member, Brielle Bennion, about the direct and indirect impacts of COVID-19 on disadvantaged communities, vaccine hesitancy amongst these communities, and more.
Yes, my name is Chastity Washington. I'm the director with the Center for Cancer Health Equity at the Ohio State University Comprehensive Cancer Center and James Cancer Hospital.
So we know that there are disadvantages that certain populations face when it comes to cancer care and cancer outcomes. How has the COVID-19 pandemic affected these disparities?
Right. So again, a lot of it's going to be related, as it has been historically, to social determinants of health, access issues, language barriers, those sorts of things. So what's happened is, where we already have access issues, we've had periods of time where things were shut down. We do have telemedicine that was expanded, and now telemedicine doesn't work for everyone, right? If you don't have internet access, if you don't have the ability to understand the technology. And then culturally, some populations aren't just accustomed to that. They'd rather see their physician in person. So those things have been confounded by the pandemic. In addition to, we've seen a lot of people of color were the ones that were most impacted by COVID-19, which has had some impact on cancer patients and their outcomes. They're still being studied as exactly what the extent of that is, but they're, again, folks who are in those essential service jobs. So they're getting COVID more often, they're using public transportation, all those things that existed before COVID and were causing those disparities were just confounded and even more so due to the pandemic. We've seen, job loss, people losing insurance coverage, which also affects access. The food lines for the pantries. I mean, you've seen on the news, I'm sure, the long lines for food pantries where people who maybe never had to go and get food or ask for assistance were now having to do that. So again, all those things impact everyone, but especially those who are already experiencing sort of those social determinants.
And what can clinicians, so doctors, nurses, the whole, medical staff do to improve the outcomes of these people who are disadvantaged, especially in light of COVID-19?
Right. So during the pandemic, like I said, a lot of the suggestions were to sort of kind of protect those patients and not bring them in if they didn't have to come in for services. So I think a lot of what can be done is going to be outside of the scope of a clinical practice. It's going to be trying to help those patients connect with resources, help them understand how to use telehealth and telemedicine, spending that extra time walking them through that process or connecting the resources to get services. Like we had a lot of local internet providers during the height of the pandemic that would offer free services for certain times. But if you don't know how to access that or use those services or connect to those resources. So I think partnering with patient navigators or your social work team or just making sure you are in communication with those patients and addressing those needs. IHIS or Epic or whatever electronic medical records people are using do have those capabilities now. And I don't know if they're being readily used across all healthcare systems, but you can assess for those social determinants of health. There are questions in the chart that could flag patients who need financial assistance, food and housing assistance. And you can use that data, again, to actively help these patients and not just racial and ethnic minorities or underserved patients, but all patients. But I think assessing those barriers for patients, helping them connect to those resources. And now that things are a little bit better, encouraging them to get the vaccine, dealing with vaccine hesitancy, because that's also a gap with racial and ethnic minority communities. And then again, encouraging the vaccine, encouraging them to get caught up on screenings and appointments that have been missed. We know that a lot of screenings were delayed, so we're probably going to see a lot of later stage diagnosed cancers. Earlier this year, there was a bunch of cancer centers and other groups that came out with a statement, and we're going to see so much more mortality, I think, in the years to come, particularly in breast and colorectal cancer screening, because of those delays. So I think encouraging patients to get back in for routine screenings, ensuring them that it's safe, you know, reminding them of the protocols that we're taking to make sure that they will be safe when they come in for those screenings, will go a long way. Because again, those studies were done with a short period of time. They thought maybe a 6-month delay, but we know even when it opened up, there are patients that just won't come in because they don't feel safe. So I think those are a few of the things that can be done to help with all patients, but particularly minority and underserved patients. And even removing some of the access barriers like we would before the pandemic, we've started using our mobile mammography unit again, our community care coach to actually go to the people so they don't have to take transportation in, they don't have to, you know, take time off of work, and they can sit in their car and then come in for the, you know, the 15-minute mammogram and leave. So those are some of the things that we've been doing to sort of help, and then also encourage them to get, again, the vaccine and those sorts of things.
So regarding vaccine hesitancy, especially in the cancer population, we know that for most patients with cancer, the vaccine is safe. Where is the vaccine hesitancy, I guess, coming from, or what are the misconceptions people have, and how can clinicians, you know, get through to patients and their families like this is safe and, you know, it's something that you should do?
So what we're seeing is if people know someone who's had the vaccine and it's been okay, or if they've experienced someone who's had COVID, unfortunately, and had a negative outcome, then that sort of encourages them. But in traditionally in some of these communities, again, there's medical mistrust, but not always, but that plays a part of it. I think a lot of the media attention around the vaccine, while it's great to get that information out, if you're a lay person, you may not understand all of that information. So we've heard things about there being a microchip in the vaccine, which I think stemmed from one of the words that, one of the ingredients, I think, was actually being a lipid, but it had the word nano in it. So people thought nanochips, nanotech. So just, you know, assuring people that that's not what's in the vaccine, that the vaccine is safe, answering questions without being judgmental about the things that they believe about the vaccine is very important. Having those role models that have had the vaccine that look like them or from their community who haven't had any, you know, negative effects, I think that's important. We've done a lot of that here by promoting our staff and others who are from different communities, showing them getting the vaccine, giving information, answering questions with the community, doing things virtually on like Facebook Live or community groups that may have like a Facebook meeting. We've been present and answered questions there. So I think just really answering questions and then showing them people who have had it and have been okay, and explaining the differences between the different vaccines, and that messenger RNA has been around a while, even though it's not been used in vaccines. It's not as new as people think. I think that was a part of the fear, is that this is new. We don't know anything about it. So I think, again, just educating people is key. And then the longer that it's been out, I think the more people have watched others and kind of seen what happened to them. And now that they're seeing that it's okay, they're starting to get it. And then, of course, if you've been watching the news, the Delta variant has now got a lot of people coming back in for vaccines too.
So with, I guess, the spread now of the Delta variants and that's emergence, do you think that, you know, we made some progress forward? I think people are starting a little bit to come in for their mammograms, colonoscopies, things like that. Do you think now that the disparities are going to move backwards, or what can be done to keep on pushing it forward and overcome the disparities, even with this new challenge?
Like I said, I think we're going to see where we had seen some progress, especially with the passing of the Affordable Care Act and people having more coverage to get those preventative screenings. I think we're going to see a little bit of a lapse. I wouldn't be able to predict how much of a lapse, but it's going to widen the numbers in general. And it's also going to, again, impact that healthcare, that disparities gap. It always does. I mean, even when you have new technologies, sometimes in the beginning, it widens the gap because these communities are slower on the uptake sometimes for obvious reasons and lots of reasons. So I think we're going to see some of that, but what we can try to do is get ahead of that. Like I said, encouraging people to get back in for screenings, encouraging HPV vaccination that took a hit during the pandemic as well. Those rates dropped incredibly during a several month period of time. So we also are making efforts to sort of encourage people to get not only the school vaccines that kids need, but the HPV vaccine as well. Now that, you know, things are opening back up, go back in, get your checkup, get your vaccines. But I think making a concerted effort in those communities, you know, we do the generic campaigns, but then also doing specific campaigns in those communities and populations. And then going to the community when we can. I know with the numbers going back up, we may have to revisit that, but we've been doing some outreach in the summer as things open back up, actually going into the communities in our area. And I know other places have been doing that as well, participating in events, farmers markets, being there to answer questions, encourage people, connect them to resources like the breast and cervical early detection program, which is in many states. And then some states even have it for colon cancer. But letting them know that's available if you have lost your insurance and you still need these services. But just being a resource and then, like you said, answering questions and letting them know why it's important. Letting them know that there are safety precautions in place when you do go in. And just kind of reinforcing the importance of all those things and then giving them the tools to get it. Like if they have, we have patient navigators and community health workers. So that's huge for places that have the ability and resources to use those individuals, because they can then connect people to resources for transportation. If you can't get to an appointment, they can help them with resources for other things too. So again, if I'm worried about being evicted or I don't have food on the table, my health kind of falls down lower on that sort of hierarchy of needs. So when you have someone that connects you to those other resources and you kind of don't have to worry about those things as much, then you can kind of focus on your health needs. So it's a lot of work and a lot of it is outside of the scope of actually physically going to a clinician or your physical health. It's like I said, those social determinants and making sure all those things are taken care of so that you can focus on your health.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a lot of work. It's important work though. You know, we appreciate all that you've been doing.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Vitals. Be sure to never miss a beat with Oncology Nursing News.